The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Mō tū rārau mai kia on the rag, hei kōnei ipurangi mō ngā mana wahine. Citizens of the nation, welcome back to On the Rag, a podcast for and about the mana of women. Ko Alex Casey aho, joined as always in this ripper new year 2020 by Leonie Hayden.
Kia ora.
And Michelle Acourt.
Excited to be here.
It's been a long time. I mean, we've seen a lot of each other past week.
Yeah, I feel like I'm your flatmate now.
I love it.
It's really good.
I love it. Should have rigged up some GoPros. That could have just been the podcast.
That's it. I like the way we can divert each other from stuff. It's been really good. We should explain that what we've been doing is working on the new video series for 2020.
We've got season 2 coming at your eyeballs.
Yeah, we've holed ourselves away in a little kitchen. We've slaved over a hot table, writing and thinking.
And laughing.
And making very stupid jokes.
And occasionally talking about things that have got nothing to do with anything that we're going to be doing, which is how work should be.
Exactly. Yes. You need to have those diversions, I think, to remind you of your limits.
Yeah.
And to push you back on track. We have had a lot of chat about breast milk, actually, just right before we started recording this podcast, but also I recall during that writing process. It's just like a good topic to, I think.
Yeah.
I was going to say cleanse the mind, but we're actually going to focus potentially on the old breasts for season 2 of On the Rag.
Their multifaceted symbolism and functionality in today's society.
And their offensiveness.
Yeah.
And
tits.
And tits out for the boys.
tits out for the boys.
A cultural study of tits out for the boys. Actually, not a bad idea. What is this podcast? We're here to talk about things that have been going on in the news, in the media, and in our own lives. We like to just yarn to each other on work time. And it's been a hell of a month already. I don't know about the two of you, but I'm like, it's still not the end of January.
No.
It's the end of the last day today, but God, it's felt like
January
a long...
2020 has been 10 years long.
Yeah. We've lived 1,000 lives.
Yeah.
It does feel like that, which is really interesting because at this point in my life, everything's supposed to go really fast. But I just think so much has been packed into January. And it started with a hiss and a roar in terms of work and what was going on in the world. And there's that lovely thing that's in the air at the beginning of every year where you feel like you get a chance to redesign your life because of what the calendar ticking over. So we should talk about what we've all done to redesign our lives. Not in a group way.
Oh, boy.
When I was away over the summer, a lady that we were away with, she wasn't there for the whole time, but we met up with her a couple of times, and she's sort of like a coach in business. And she told us that New Year's resolutions are out.
Okay.
And what you do instead is you choose a power word for yourself to steer the direction of your year.
Ooh.
And obviously, like, one word can have, like, a lot of different interpretations, but you have to, like, hold it at the center of, like, what your goals are for work, for your personal life, for all those sorts of things. So we just came up on New Year's Eve with like our power words.
I love this. I've just got really excited and I've thought of mine. Very good. Just instantly thought of mine. What's yours?
Mine was, oh my God. No, I forgot it. So I can just remember time. Like everybody else's. My friend's was no, which I thought was like a really great like power word because she just does too much. She accepts too much. She takes on other people's shit. She takes on too much work. She does it sort of out of kindness, but also kind of out of desperation. So it was like, you need to learn how to say no to other people and yourself.
Yeah.
Wow. So her word for the year was no. Mine was intention.
Okay.
So it's like, do things with intention. Do it like everything with intention. Don't do anything just as like a throw away or just to waste time or like everything has to have intention.
Wow. That's really good.
Yeah. I just forgot it for a second there, but then I started talking about it. I was like, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Everyone's words were really different. But I also think the exercise of coming up with your word, even if it's not like something you end up doing, it tells you a lot about yourself. Like people knew what their word was pretty quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As soon as
but
you were
surprised
it.
By it, but then also like, oh no, that's definitely it. And it's like, so a part of you knew what you needed to do.
This is great.
Yeah.
And then it just came out. So it's like, even if you don't stick to it, it's a good exercise.
Well, you just said that, like, I have not heard this before. I haven't prepared this earlier. But as soon as you started talking about it, my word is move. Which is because I feel like I need to move my body more and I don't mean, you know, go to the gym and do a spin class because I'm not that kind of lady, but I sit too much. I'm too, what's the word? I'm too
stationary,
like an envelope. And and also I want to travel. So I want to move around the world and I also want to keep moving my body. So yes. I'm done. Good. I'm good. I love it.
The word that immediately came into my head, also having not done this exercise, was calm.
Nice.
This year I am trying to, had a lot of sort of off-the-clock therapy with my stepfather, who's a very spiritual, very calm person, and he was like, stress is a choice, and you choose every day to get stressed. I can see it, because you've defined yourself by being busy and being stressed, and you need to just make a different choice. So I'm choosing calm this year.
Great.
That's lovely.
It's going okay so far because not a lot. Well, actually, no. I find it hard to be calm reading the news.
Yeah.
Of course.
And I don't quite know how to do that. I'm making choices in my work and my life where I'm like, I choose to not be rushed and I choose to not stress. But I don't know how you can read even just the things that have happened this month and go, fine.
Yeah.
So any advice there would be very welcome.
But I think that's really good. I think anybody that can read the news, which is essentially about conflict, that's what news is, anybody who can read that and not have a fight or flight or freeze response to it is not quite awake.
True. Yeah.
So, but it's, I guess what that means is choosing the things that you can do something about rather than feeling overwhelmed by it.
Mm. Right.
Like choosing calm isn't about never feeling extreme emotions ever, is it? It's about your reaction to things, right?
Yeah.
So of course you're going to get angry reading the news, but it's like what you do when you step away from that.
And giving yourself permission to not take everything on board. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's just, I mean, I'm sure we've sort of talked about this a bit already, but particularly then, you know, we've done a climate change episode of On the Rag, and that was, what, December, and then January kicks off with Australia kicking off, and it's like, what do you do? Mm. What can we do here as, like, one little person who, you know, is feeling guilty at a batch somewhere under the orange skies, you know? It's, like, complete paralyzed feeling.
But there are things that you can, I mean, I'm going to say two things about that. One is I made a list of the things that helped me deal with my anxiety, and one of them is tidying a drawer because it's one manageable thing that I can order and it makes me feel tremendously good. So I'll pick one drawer and I'll fix that drawer. And that makes, and you know, you can go back to the drawer several times a day and open it and go, look how orderly and nice that is. It's delightful. So, yeah, so that's one tiny, tiny practical thing. But in terms of the global stuff, I keep being impressed over this summer of bushfires in Australia with how many women are doing practical things to do to do something with the fight response we have to it. You know, in our last episode for last year, it was climate change, and we talked about how that's a feminist issue. Part of that reason is because women are more affected by climate change, but it also is because women are more effective in fighting it. Women are right at the forefront of climate activism. And I kept looking around at what was being done about the Australian bushfires, and so many of the useful things being done were done by women. Like, there are knitting groups, there's one in Christchurch, but there are many all over the world, as well as all over New Zealand, where people are knitting mittens for koala bears who have been burnt, and knitting pouches for kangaroos who don't have mothers anymore, and crafting liners for, I was going to say cages, for the places that they put animals to make them comfortable and safe. So that's one of the things that, and women have been leading that one for sure.
Yeah.
And that's some great examples, like Emily Wright's doing the auctions for Aussie that raised $28,000.
Yeah, they did so well.
Yeah, it was amazing. And it was so simple.
Yeah.
You just, you know, what can you offer and chuck it up on Trade Me. Trade Me said we won't charge you any fees. $28,000 later, somebody's going out to a gig with John Campbell.
Yeah.
What a prize.
I know. Wouldn't that be great? I wish I could afford that.
And old mate Celeste Barber.
Yeah.
That was just incredible. I remember seeing that fundraiser, which she did on Facebook, started on Facebook, and it was at about a million or so. And I was like, what the fuck? This is amazing. Yeah, 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 and then I checked back in 2 days later. And what did it was like?
It closed off at $53 million.
Whoa. Are you serious?
Serious.
Yeah.
And the campaign was called This Is Terrifying, and she did it through Instagram and Facebook, and $53 million later. Mm. And she's, I was going to say, she's just a comedian from Australia, but she's not Kylie Minogue, who also, by the way, donated, I don't know, $500,000 or something.
Yeah.
But she's a person who went, oh, I don't like this. This is really scaring me.
What can I do?
I'll give a place where people can make a donation.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. And what about the woman who sold her nudes?
Oh yeah.
That was phenomenal.
I don't know about that one. Tell me about that.
She said she was just like, fuck it. She's like, $10, I think. She's like, make a donation, send me your receipt and I'll send you a nude, basically.
Yeah.
And she made so much money.
She made like $50,000 or something.
But it was real interesting. I think she's from California. It was a lot of nudes. She needed to start hiring people because it got so out of control. But it was like kind of amazing as well, because she sort of did this follow-up thing being like, you know, she essentially outed herself as, you know, a woman who, I think she, you know, does that for a living.
Mm.
She sells photos of herself. She kind of operates online. And she had sort of outed herself as that being her profession to people who didn't know in her family. And she, I think she said she like, her family stopped talking to her. It had a real significant impact on her personal life. And she was just like, but fuck it, save the koalas. And it was just amazing. Like, it was just, talk about women using what they got.
Yeah. You know? That's great.
And completely,
Are they all unique nudes to everybody?
I'm not sure. I imagine at a certain point she would have had to start reusing some.
Limited edition.
Yeah.
Who's going to know?
Totally.
Meanwhile, Jeff Bezos from Amazon is out here donating the equivalent of about 3 minutes of work for him.
Great.
Thanks, Jeff.
The least you could do. Like, literally the least.
Mm.
I think Metallica donated more than he did.
Oh, dear. But yes, there is... there's always, you know, that old adage, look for the people who are helping, I guess is always a good way of staying calm in those situations.
Yeah. How did we all cope with the orange skies? Because I had a terribly selfish response to it. I spent that Sunday when we had orange skies in Auckland. I know there were orange skies further south in the days leading up to that. But I just lost my shit because this was the nuclear apocalypse I was promised in the 1970s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I really had to talk myself down from thinking this is the end of the world, the sky will never be blue again. And, you know, was, oh, poor Michelle's gardens, you know, my birds are gone. Because the birds stopped singing. They all disappeared from the tui and the kereru were gone. And then I realised after a 24-hour period that this was just the tiny fallout that was an indication of how serious it was in Australia, and I should shut up. And
I didn't even grow up with the threat of nuclear apocalypse, and I felt that way as well.
Okay, great.
This is it. Yeah. This is totally it. Yeah. Fuck. Well, it was nice. Life in general was nice while it lasted. The sky was nice while it lasted. I got so freaked out when I went to the mall.
Yes. Okay.
Like, I just was like, I have to shut the sky out of my life just for the afternoon, just while I stop thinking that we're all going to die in the next week.
I stood on the deck looking out over the bush going, what the fuck have we done?
Did you fall to your knees and raise your arms to the sky?
I did a little bit. Excellent. And then I opened a bottle of Prosecco and it didn't cheer me up, but it took some of the angst out of it. I don't know.
No.
What have we done? Where are the birds? Oh, it's really dramatic. It was great.
Living for the drama. I wasn't in Auckland, so I didn't see it in full force. But I think it was like a day or so previous. We were in Christchurch and it was, it wasn't orange, but it was just like, looked overcast, but was extremely hot. And we realized the overcast was smoke. It was smoke.
Yeah.
And Joe was like, I can taste smoke. And I was like, don't be stupid. You are being ridiculous. Stop being hysterical. And then I like checked Twitter and I was like, no! No! Again, like all the drama comes back. There is no rational response to that, right? Like,
yeah, but I kept reading other people's Twitter feeds going, oh, this makes me feel so empathetic to our Australian neighbours. I go, oh, yeah, right. It's not actually about me. Okay, yep. Good call.
Oh dear. Moving from skies to stars, if you'll allow me.
Was amazing.
You got to interview Margaret Atwood, Michelle.
I did. It was fantastic and terrifying, and she told me off. I got got verbally spanked for a lazy question. So because she's coming to New Zealand, she'll be here in the second week of February in Christchurch, Auckland, and Wellington, and so as part of that a promotion for those big events in conversation with Margaret Atwood, which people have been complaining about because it's $150 for the best seats, and I keep going, yeah, you'd pay that to see Elton John, so shut up.
I don't know, Elton John is much more expensive than that.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. I have paid much more than that.
Well.
So that's a bargain.
Okay, she's cheap as chips.
Yeah.
And it was really amazing. So she was in Toronto and I was interviewing her for the project in Auckland, and she couldn't see me, but I could see her, and she didn't know anything about me, and I asked some terrible questions, those questions that you chuck out going, I wonder what this will hook.
Mm-hmm.
But she's 80 and she's won the Booker Prize twice, and she's not having a bar of that sort of carry on.
Right.
So there's quite a bit of Michelle. Now, that's not how you ask a question. So, but it was amazing. And we talked about transgender issues. She is not a TERF, I am delighted to say. I'm so pleased about that. She says she doesn't understand what the objection is to trans people using bathrooms. And if there is a problem, why don't we just redesign the bathrooms? Amen, sister.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we talked about Trump. And I guess the thing that I came away with was, apart from that she's awesome, and I felt really scolded a couple of times, was that she says any pushback against women is a sign of a totalitarian regime trying to take hold, and we should always watch out for those signs. So when we're threatened with losing whatever gains we've made, like abortion rights, you know you're in trouble. Mm. And the message that she's trying to get to men as well is that when you start to try to put women back in their boxes, the next people they're going to come for is men. So how about we all get onto it and sort it out?
Mm.
Yeah.
And she would know.
She's amazing.
Do you reckon, though, like, writing stuff like Handmaid's Tale would... I mean, she sort of pushed and extrapolated these ideas to their very limit for creative reasons.
Yeah.
Do you reckon that maybe the line starts to get...
that it gets normalised? Yeah.
And that you're like, you know... Well, us all getting rounded up and put in concentration camps is just around the corner. Like,
yeah. Yeah, and she does talk really clearly about that, saying that she wrote it in, when was it? 'cause I studied it at university. But anyway, so she wrote it decades ago as a warning. Don't let this happen. And then I don't think she feels guilty, but she is terrified that we're heading towards the dystopian future that she was warning us about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ask her about, I know there was some talk about the Handmaid's costume as like a protest symbol.
Yeah.
Which was great. What about Kylie Jenner's Handmaid's Tale birthday party?
She she said she didn't want to be too critical of people who weren't in the room when they were being discussed, but that clearly if you thought that was a birthday party costume, you had seriously missed the point. So, yeah, and she just found
that. She's so classy. So,
yeah.
Subtweet on Kylie Jenner.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad start to the year, you know.
It was pretty great.
We ended 2019 with Gloria Steinem.
Yes.
There's still hope out
there. No. And how cool that a woman of 80, and I'm not saying 80's old, but that you're still right at the centre of the zeitgeist and still making your contribution and still fighting. So, yeah, pretty cool. Mm.
You didn't ask her what the last movie she watched was, did you?
No, but I did have on my question list, but was too nervous to ask it. What is the least feminist thing you've done?
Oh.
Yeah.
Michelle.
You're right back up there. Why is that important?
keeping things positive, another amazing international superstar that Margaret's not here yet, but Lizzo was here. Lizzo was in Henderson.
Of all places.
And I just wanted to give a shout out particularly to a piece that was written after Lizzo was kind of around, did the media circuit, performed at FOMO. And Kate Owen, who is like a social media genius, I believe.
Yeah.
I think that's her official term.
Yeah.
I know her as a Twitter person, but I know people don't like being called Twitter people. I've got in trouble for that in the past because she's also just a human. wrote this amazing piece for the spin-off called What Lizzo Did For Me, about how her music and just her, I think a lot of it's just the confidence that just oozes out of Lizzo, which is completely infectious. And it's just every moment feels revolutionary of Lizzo just being.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Wrote this really, really great kind of personal essay about listening to Lizzo's songs, particularly the song Soulmate, and kind of embracing some of the affirmations in it and how it literally, like not understating it, changed her life. And it's just an amazing, amazing piece. If you haven't read it yet, it's called What Lizzo Did For Me. And I think the lyric she lifted in particular was... let me just find it. It's all about, buying yourself flowers, being there for yourself. And the lyric is just, damn, you're the one. And she started looking in the mirror every day and saying that to herself. Started off being like a very awkward, uncomfortable thing to do, as you might expect. And then eventually it just became how she felt.
Yeah. Damn, girl.
I was like, you're the one.
You are my soulmate.
Yeah. You deserve person the best in the mirror. Sheets.
Yeah.
And part of that story is that Kate tweeted that about what Lizzo had inspired her to feel and be. And Lizzo picked that up and retweeted it.
And talked about it in an interview.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So cool.
So that connection where, I mean, that's the most powerful thing is when somebody on the world stage affects your life and you tell that to people and the person who is on the world stage affecting your life takes the gift back. I mean, it receives the gift that, yeah. I mean, there's a circle being closed, isn't there? It's really amazing.
Totally. Totally.
Thanks, Lizzo.
Just wonderful. Just wonderful. I did like, it was quite a funny thing. You know how like they do their celebrities. They do their like media run. They meet all the, you know, radio and TV hosts. And I assume because they have like kind of this rushed experience in each country, it's mostly their experiences with this media that informs what they understand the country to be. So I think Carnor had got Lizzo to try some cheese rolls, which is like, love it. But then at FOMO, Lizzo like came out, she's like, I've had your cheese rolls. And it's like, you're talking to mostly Aucklanders. And they're like, hey.
What's that? It's
like, do you mean a sausage roll? Like,
yeah. Just, you mean like from Orphan's Kitchen? It was just quite funny. And it made me really want a cheese roll. I would love for cheese rolls to be, you know, a full national dish, but
it's fantastic. They are fantastic.
I don't even know if I've had one.
Oh God! When this, the only reason, well, it's not the only, it's the major reason that I do national tours is to spend at least half of that tour in the South Island living on cheese rolls,
right,
and testing which ones are the best.
Yeah,
the best ones tend to come from Southland, Invercargill. Sort of area. Yeah, they do a nice one in Oamaru at the Whitestone Cheese Factory, but it's a bit fancy. I like the ones with the cheese and onion dip mixed on.
Yeah,
cheese.
Me too.
Can I tell you, this is out of school, so this is just between us, that during that interview with Carnor, Lizzo kept talking about how much she loved cheese rolls and would like to put one in her vagina. Which is delightful, but it's a 7 p.m. show.
Yeah.
So they could.
Also, family planning advice against that.
Yeah.
It's, well, definitely.
Is it specifically on the list?
We can definitely put it to the
end. Add it to the list piece on the spinoff. 5 things to stop putting in your vagina in 2020. It's 6 now.
Okay. What if it was wholemeal bread? It's just yeast.
It's yeast. Yeah. It's yeast for yeast. All right. We don't want that.
All right.
You know, oh no, this is a family show. Have we talked about how you can make bread out of?
Out of,
say it.
The downstairs yeast.
No, we have not.
Sourdough.
I think we should talk about that now.
No, it's just something that I've been told by someone in the baking industry that now, it is possible.
I feel like there was an artist who served some bread at their opening. I'm going to look it up.
That is ringing a bell.
Now, is that like, do people know that that's what they're eating?
I don't
know.
In
the same way, well, you have to mark like gluten, etc.
May contain traces of lady juice.
The bread doesn't look bad, whatever that was that you just had on. Yeah.
It was a British blogger. I mean, I reckon lots of people have tried it. Leavened with yeast from a vaginal infection.
Oh.
So that's the weird bit. It's like, it's thrush bread. It's not just being like.
Yeah, no, I chucked that on the lawn for the actual thrushes. I would want consent. I would want to be invited to consent to consuming that
thrush bread.
But it's all cooked and stuff, so it's not like.
I don't care.
I think that's another question for family planning.
Yeah.
What happens if you eat that?
Probably nothing much at all.
No, probably. It doesn't go round in circles. You wouldn't
end up with an endless
thrush again.
Oh.
Might be homeopathic. It might be one of those things where a little bit of thrush bread stops you getting thrush. Maybe that is the bread you could put in the cheese roll.
I feel like we need to put a legal disclaimer in front of this, like, none of us are Goop doctors. Lab show.
None
of this
here.
Is medical advice. None of this has been scientifically
tested.
We are
not medical professionals in any way.
On that note, cool tips. What can we recommend in good faith to people to do that will make their lives a little easier?
So the thing that I've been doing is replacing, I don't use body lotion anymore. I have found a fragrance-free, paraben-free sunscreen. So okay. instead of, because I, by the time, if you've put some body lotion on after the shower in the morning and then you have to put a layer of sunscreen on your legs and your arms and your every chest and your everything, I get, oh, I'm bored, I'm going now. So I just skip, I don't do body lotion anymore, I just do sunscreen. And I found one that is basically a body lotion with SPF 50.
Great.
So that's really good. And I've also started the face sunscreen, mixing a little bit of BB cream into it to tint it so that you can keep reapplying that all day without having a white face. So that's my tip.
You're a genius. Sun safety.
Yeah, I'm really into it because I had a biopsy of a thing on my leg just before Christmas and I thought, oh, it's well past time to take this very seriously.
Yeah.
I should have done that 30 years ago.
No more tanning and baby oil for you.
No
Michelle.
More coconut oil and lying in the sun. No, yeah. No, I won't be doing that.
I had a, the first time I've had a blistering sunburn. You were privy to it, the both of you. You saw my hands.
I was furious at you.
I know, I was in so much trouble with everybody. I was guilty, Denver. I'm just a pale lady who went to pee and made some mistakes. But it's the first time that literally, like, I had blisters on my shoulders from the sunburn, and I was Googling it, and it was like, you know, you only need 5 bad burns in your life to up your rate, you know, your risk of skin cancer by this much percent. And I was just like,
ah.
So I'm definitely going to take all of your advice on board, Michelle. Every morning, SPF 50 on the face and on the arms. Yep. And I go to the beach now and just cover up.
With like a fringe.
Yeah. Yes.
Like Billy Porter wore to the Grammys, the fringe that closes and opens electronically.
That's what I need.
That's a great idea.
But for my whole body, you know, like really wide brim.
Yeah.
Just walking like a big jellyfish.
Like a sort of one of those solar showers. You could just wear one of those with the big curtain all around you.
Yeah.
That would be quite good. You need a lid on it.
Yeah. I'm just good fun at the beach now, though, because I lie there with a hat over my face and just a long sheet over my whole body. Like, I just look like a nightmare. Like,
you could
not
do a Handmaid's Tale uniform and just be a permanent protest against hatred of women.
True.
That would work.
That's true. What are your cool tips of the month, Leonie?
So I discovered this thing that is really helping me sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically like a small rectangular wheat bag, and it's, I think it's, my boyfriend gave it to me. I think he bought it from like a yoga supplies store that you like lay on your eyes when you're doing the pretend to be dead bit at the end.
Yep. Or as other people call it, a meditation.
Yeah, that bit. Same thing. And we've just moved into this new apartment, and the bedroom, like the sun just comes straight in the window in the morning, and the curtains are white as well. So I was like, oh my God, it's so bright. So he gave me this like wheat bag eye mask, basically. And the thing I have discovered, it doesn't just keep out the light. There is something about the weight of that thing that puts me to sleep instantly.
Wow.
So that night, because I'm not a very good sleeper, I'm good once I get to sleep, but I find getting to sleep quite hard. And I had found the weight of that thing on my eyes so relaxing that morning that I just put it straight on my face and I went to sleep within 5 minutes.
Wow.
It was really weird. And so I was also talking to my friend about it, and she was talking about like your third eye and how sometimes you need to like put something on it.
Yeah.
To just like keep your energy in, because otherwise your thoughts just go a little bit like they're just all getting out and swirling around or whatever.
Yeah.
And like I was like, that is kind of how it feels when I'm trying to get to sleep and I can't. And then I was like weighing down my third eye.
This is great.
And it's like, great. I was putting my third eye to sleep. Now, I know that sounds hella frou-frou, but all I can say is this weighted eye mask thing is just like changing my life right now.
Does it change your dreams? Have you noticed that your dreams are different?
No, I have to figure that out. I didn't use it last night and I had some of the most hideous nightmares I've had in ages. So maybe.
Mm. Yeah. I really like that. I think it's great.
But yeah, I love the thing. I just want to take it everywhere with me now.
Those little wheat bags smell quite nice too. I remember the smell of the wheat.
Yeah, originally was lavender flavoured, this one as well. The smell's kind of gone, but
I like the wheaty.
It is a nice smell.
Yeah. I love like the clamminess of a wheat bag as well when you put them in. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Good.
Mm,
we good. Like it.
Might help someone.
My cool tip is stolen from Twitter, from Pinky Fang, who I think only tweeted this yesterday. Extremely hot dishwashing tip. Fill a spray bottle with 50% dishwashing liquid, 50% water. When you're only washing one or two items, you can spray it on and wipe or rinse it off without having to waste loads of liquid and fill the sink every time.
Oh my God.
It's genius. She followed it up saying this tip changed my life and everyone that I tell gets super hyped on it. So consider this advice my gift to you too. Thank you very much, Pinky Fang.
Yeah, nice.
Pinky's
work.
Great. She's an artist. Mm. And she designed the Aunties logo and is currently redesigning
it.
So yeah, she's a very cool woman.
What a real one.
Yay.
Another cool tip. Another seamless segue coming up here.
Okay, I'm hanging on.
Perhaps the coolest tip
mm-hmm.
is to join the spin-off members.
Ah, yes.
It will cost you as little as just a dollar, one-off donation if you want to, but if you commit to donating $80 a year, you will get a Toby Morris tea towel.
Oh my God.
It's a brand new original piece of art. And it's a tea towel, I would say, is on the larger side.
Yeah.
And that's not a criticism.
It's good.
It's really good for wrapping up bread, loaves of bread. Yeah, if you make your thrush,
your thrush sourdough, wrap it in a spin-off tea towel.
And after you've sprayed your 50% water detergent on your dishes, mm-hmm. you can dry it off nicely.
Dry it all off. And, you know, if you're me, you can use the tea towels to cover up your body on the beach. It's like actual endless uses. And you also will help us to keep making all the things that we make and produce award-winning journalism and writing and things that you all enjoy.
Yep.
So if you'd like to support us, support the spin-off members.
That's nice. Great. It'd be crazy not to.
Great tip. That's
great tip. Great organic tip. So we've talked about a lot of positive stuff. I'm sorry I need to bring the mood down briefly because there's two other sort of darker news stories, which I think have also produced some quite interesting nuanced conversations. The first being the death of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, and what you're allowed to say about someone who has a complex place in the social history.
And I think I mean, because you saw it all kind of play on Twitter quite fast, if that was where you were processing that news.
Every single stage of, like, the internet cycle just got, like, an hour. I feel like I saw the whole thing play out within an hour.
Yeah, just like a snake kind of eating its tail. Just
adoration, people pointing out the allegations, the backlash to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the defense of that, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite incredible to watch. And there was also, you know, there was some prominent, I think even Rachel Wood said something within an hour or two about the allegations. There was a journalist who tweeted about them and I think got suspended.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah,
from
the Washington Post.
And the tweet was just a link to the story.
Right.
No opinion or commentary attached.
No, it's just another story about Kobe Bryant that would be worth remembering, which was that he was accused by a young woman of rape and the case didn't end up going to court. There was a settlement and an apology and a weird kind of apology, but an interesting for that period acknowledgement that he had assumed that she had consented, but later retrospectively understood that when she kept saying no, no, no and pushing him away, then perhaps it wasn't consent, which was, I remember at the time, a very interesting moment in, how do I put this, that there had always been this assumption that young women threw themselves at famous wealthy men and that famous wealthy men were entitled to young women. And as much as that apology didn't make anything better, it was a really interesting moment when he admitted that he was possibly wrong. I mean, didn't go far enough. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
And then he bought his wife a $5 million diamond ring that same week, and you know,
there was a beautifully orchestrated kind of PR campaign, which I think had extended right up until, you know, very recently, about rehabilitating his image, etc.
Yeah.
I also feel like, and I don't know if this is right, that there is a special kind of rung for sports stars in particular. And I think it's maybe because they're like known for, you know, something that isn't linked necessarily to their behavior or the, their personality or the way they are, because it's just all about their talent. Obviously, Kobe, from my understanding, was beloved as well for, you know, who people thought he was. But I think of like things like the Cougar Line case and stuff, and even Brock Turner, the promising swimmer. And there is this sort of sense of like, keep them separate. I don't know, like,
yeah,
people manage to make this really bizarre psychic link, disconnect, I mean, between sports stars and their behaviour in a way that I think they allow more of a disconnect than other prominent people.
Is it because they're not famous because of what they think, say, believe? It's because of what they do on the field or on the court.
I think that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah, I don't know if that's true or not. Because obviously at the same time we've got fucking Harvey Weinstein. That's all happening now. It's clear that other prominent men in other industries do get away with this, and a lot of people still stick by them. But I do just think there is a special power afforded to sports stars, male sports stars, that other people don't get.
Yeah.
But it has been really interesting seeing it all play out and seeing a lot of people forget. It's also kind of a disservice to the human experience, right, to just ignore. That's part of his life too, in the same way that all his achievements, all his talents were. You know?
Yeah, they can all exist.
They can all exist at the same time.
Yeah, and talking about the terrible bad things that he's done doesn't wipe out his ability as a basketballer or what he did, you know, what he's done for educating kids and la la la. They both happened.
Mm. Yeah.
They're both real. Mm. We're allowed to talk about them. We should talk about them, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of the people who didn't think that it was appropriate for that to be brought up so soon after his death. I mean, because they knew quite early on that a family member or members were also in the accident and that had also passed away. And I have to admit, my first instinct when I realised that his daughter had died as well was, because of that, maybe go a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was just sort of like how I was like, because I was shocked when I, within maybe 5 minutes of hearing that he had passed away, then saw someone with hit screenshot and put on my Instagram story excerpts of her testimony, of the victim's testimony. And then I was like, oh, but his family are going through so much right now. Why point that out? I mean, I know it was bad, but just give him some time to process. And I really have to question my own, like, reactions there. It's like, is that fear, because I like you say, I believe that you can hold all of these truths at the same time without having to say he was a saint or the devil.
Uh-huh.
This is a dude with a lot of money and power, which led him to do a lot of really great philanthropic things and just kind things for children.
Mm-hmm.
And then also potentially quite a serious abuse of power, because that's what men do when they're given limitless money and power.
And I think part of that instinctive reaction is that he's not here. The people who are left didn't do the terrible thing.
Exactly.
And what they know of him is different.
They're allowed to feel like
he
was a wonderful man for as long as they live.
Well, and I also hope that his surviving family weren't reading Twitter and
you would fucking Instagram. Hope.
Yeah.
Certainly more pressing things out there.
It's also just unbelievable, as a bit of a tangent, that TMZ broke the news before the sheriff's department were even able to tell the family.
That's it's just like horrible. Yeah.
It was such like a modern moment on every level.
Check.
Totally.
Yeah.
Like, sure, you might be the first media outlet with the information, but fucking check if his family's been told.
Yeah, it's outrageous. And I don't ever understand those scoops that happen in terms of minutes, because I get a scoop is important to a media organisation because you've got the story first, you've got all the information first, and but that's different from just notification of death,
yeah.
right? Mm. And I don't understand why 5 minutes makes any difference.
I mean, we can't pretend that TMZ has any idea yeah. what a yeah. moral or a principle is.
Yeah.
5 minutes is a lifetime when it comes to breaking something first, I guess.
Yeah.
If you don't care about the effect on someone's family.
I'm just not sure consumers care. That, like, do we care that... Does anybody care that they heard about it 5 minutes before anybody else?
Yeah. That's actually weirdly, I think people do.
Oh, do
I'm
they?
Not on Facebook anymore, but I do remember the sort of perverse pleasure that some people seem to take at being the first to go, R.I.P. David Bowie.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like...
And then everyone goes, what?
Everyone's like, what? And it's like, you like... You literally put that on your Facebook within like 10 seconds of hearing the news in the hope that you were the first person to put it on Facebook. Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh. That's not a tribute. That's a race.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. That's scoring points.
Yeah.
Totally.
One of many things I don't miss about Facebook, I gotta say.
Yeah.
I mean, people do it on Twitter as well, though.
Do we want to talk about Weinstein? We're in this,
I think
the shadow realm.
I think we should, because I think that the piece that we have here from Gia, what's her name?
Gia Tolentino.
Is just so fantastically written that we should be boosting that to anybody that listens to this podcast from The New Yorker.
Yeah, I'm also quite fascinated, again, more of a media kind of aside. The journalists who have made it in to watch the trial... There's like a line outside the courtroom that I think I saw someone advertising. It was for some prominent, I'm not sure who it was, like some New Yorker journalist or New York Times advertising for an intern to go and stand in line for them at like 4 a.m. so they could walk in it whenever the courtroom opens.
Because they take 70 journalists a day, apparently. If you're not in the first 70, you don't get to be in the room.
But like a new sneaker drop or something.
Yeah.
It's quite weird.
Yeah, or tickets quite to weird. A show, really. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Weinstein's hobbling his way into court every day, hunched over.
It's the performance of a lifetime.
It's not wrong of me to think that that's bullshit, eh? The walker. And I know he's had back surgery. And, and he's got a really ugly walker with, apparently he's got a new one now, but he started out with the one with the tennis balls on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to look like a sad, lonely, ineffectual, vulnerable man who is the victim.
Me hurt somebody, I couldn't, I'm so old and sick.
And also reading the reporting that's coming out of the courtroom, I think it is detailed in that Gia Tolentino piece, it just as a bit of a warning. I wasn't really aware of the full extent. Like, I always knew, you know, the sort of the more prominent stories that had come out. But when you read those testimonies, it's disgusting.
Yeah.
And it's a lot to process. And the scale of it, it's just absolutely shocking. And then I just think back to those women last year, those two comedians who screamed at him. In that room, and I'm like, that should be the normal.
Yeah.
None of the rest of this is the normal. That old man hobbling, going, meow, meow, me, I'm just ready for my dinner.
I my hope it's something sharp.
That I don't want that to be what is remembered of this. I don't think it will be.
It seems incredibly
clear that he's going down in a big way. But yeah.
I know we're not up to book club, but I read She Said, the amazing book that's written by the two journalists who broke the Weinstein story. Their names are Jodi Kantor and Megan Toohey from the New York Times. And it's I highly recommend it. It's a rollicking, romping read. It's not too triggering, I think, because really the story is about how they got women to talk and how they uncovered the details, and they thought they were doing an historical search into how he used to behave. And then somebody said to them, why are you looking at 20, 30 years ago? Why don't you look at what he's doing now? And it goes on after they broke the Weinstein story. They also talk about what went on behind the scenes and the Christine Blasey Ford testifying in the Senate against Kavanaugh. And that is also incredibly enlightening. So I highly recommend that. And I think as a backgrounder to what I'm reading now about the Weinstein case, it's just making me read all the coverage and go, yep, great, cool, yep, good.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, it's so extraordinary that, and he's not the only one, that he could build a whole world where people were basically operating as his handmaidens.
Mm. Yeah.
The women he assaulted, the women who he manipulated into providing the women for him to assault, the men he silenced, just a whole world that he created. And there's some, stories about these women who, the female lawyers who went over to the dark side to work for him. It's just using the information that they gained from decades of representing women in sexual assault cases to undermine women who are accusing him of sexual assault. So, yeah, good book.
Great.
Can't wait for the movie.
Have you read Catch and Kill?
No.
The Ronan Farrow one?
No.
Yeah, that was on my list too.
Yeah.
It's, just also trying to take a break from heavy reading.
Yeah, I'm having a little break from that. Yeah.
It's tricky. If we were to shante over to a mansplain moment, just to bring the mood back up, I've really enjoyed the plight of Stefan Molyneux. He can't make any money anymore. No one's going to hire him, Michelle, because he's said heaps of racist things.
And sexist, horrible things, and it's not fair because they can just Google him and find out what an asshole he is.
What does he say? What am I going to do? Go get a job back in the corporate world? One search and it would be functionally impossible.
It's correct.
Like, yeah.
Whose fault is that?
You
flippin' weirdo.
It is one of those. I saw a cartoon during the Watergate era. That's how old I am. And it was, and it stayed with me all my life. It was a cartoon of Richard Nixon with his pants around his ankles. Is it just sort of a little fat Ritzit with a massive nose? Anyway, just, that's not important. But, and there's a steaming pile of shit in his pants. And the caption is, "Someone just shat my pants." You did it. You did it to yourself.
Yes, so, you know, Stephen Molyneux needs money.
I think we should start a some kind of GoFundMe for the poor guy. I want to start a GoFundMe for the person who tweeted this incredibly funny tweet. Stephen Molyneux tweeted, "Women get mostly infertile at 40, but live to be 80. Without a family, what are you going to do for those 40 long, long years?" And someone replied, "I'm going to fuck everyone. That's what I'll do. Men, women, grandmas, grandpas, your wife, everyone. Going to fuck the whole world. Everyone except you. You can go and fuck yourself." It's so good. It's so angry and funny.
So mad.
So I'll support that person if they are in need of any a job or some cash, because that was just a joy. This is not a mansplain, but I just wanted to just give a shout out to this bizarre thing that I saw on the motorway. It was a van. It was a bright yellow van, so they had my attention already. But across the back doors of the van, and it's one of those kind of double door sort of moving looking vans, it just said, "Boobies make me smile." In giant letters, and you'll notice the O's are, of course, boobies. Yes.
They got nipples.
And I thought, what does he want?
Yeah,
assuming it's a he. Assuming it's a he. Forgive me. I don't think so. I think he lives in it, assuming it's a he.
The boobmobile, dude.
Boobies make me smile.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Do you think he wants people to show him their boobies, when they drive past?
Maybe he's just sharing.
It's a request.
He's just sharing a facet of it.
The van is also somewhat painted like an ambulance.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which it seems a little bit tricky. There's a big old antenna on top.
Maybe
he uses a radar to find boobies.
Boobies, yeah.
Because they are tricky to
sensing boobies.
You never know when you're in the presence of a booby.
Beep, 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 beep.
It's just interesting. And I thought in this moment, I was like, could this this be something I call Star 555 about? Or do I just go straight to the police?
Yeah. It's a distraction, certainly. I mean, maybe he is just sharing something about himself. Maybe on the side of his, what looks like an ambulance, it says ice cream makes me grin.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just might be, maybe
these are a few of my favourite things.
Yeah.
It's like there is a car that parks on my street that has, you know how people can have the little writing on their number plate, like above the, and it's like I am a, and then the number plate is US expat, and then tiny letters at the bottom, and bloody loving it. Maybe it's like that. It's good, just like, tell me something about yourself.
Yeah.
I'm a US expat and bloody loving it.
There is a van that's on the street one over from the spin-off that makes me, actually does make me very happy.
Yeah.
It just has painted on the back, Vangelina Jolie.
Like hand-painted?
Well, it's quite nice printing. Right. But otherwise, totally white, nothing else on it, just Vangelina Jolie.
That's great.
And that genuinely does make me happy.
That makes you smile. Yeah. More than boobies, though.
Yeah.
You have to ask the question. What about Megxit? Do we want to talk about Megxit? I don't care a great deal about the Royals. But it has captured the imagination. And it has also shown us some disparities, let's say.
Yes.
Love it.
How people feel about Kate v. Meghan?
I mean, first of all, as much as a royal is allowed to put two birds in the air and yell, fuck you, at the royal family, that is probably the most extreme version of that a royal has ever done.
Yeah.
And I am so here for them protecting themselves against Princess Diana's fate.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. This is the most exciting thing.
Yeah. And I am also so here for the absolutely dire tabloid industry in the UK having the entire world show the rest of the world how fucking racist they are.
Yeah.
Those side-by-side headlines about Kate and Meghan when they were pregnant or whenever, you know, Kate's cradling her baby bump, Meghan is obsessed with hers.
Yeah.
Is it pride, vanity, acting, or a new age bonding technique? She's got her hand on her belly.
And it's like, you've been read, you know? It's like, you complain all you want, racist ass Brits, but you have been read, and these two people don't want anything to do with you. This woman of colour tried. You will let her down, and now she's gone.
The message that it sends to young women around the world that about the princess fairy tale is so fucking strong.
Yeah,
it's like,
you know, she became a princess. She lived in a castle. She rode in a horse-drawn carriage. Was it horse-drawn when she got married? And she went, this is shit.
Yeah.
I think I'll go to Canada and get a job.
Yeah.
This is much too ridiculous. I'm quite looking forward to Meghan playing herself in the next season of The Crown.
Yeah.
That would be really exciting. And, you know, just that whole idea that two people in their 30s. Like, imagine if neither of them were royal, which they won't be, kind of aren't already. But you're in your 30s, you fall in love, you get married, your 93-year-old nana says, here's what you can do and here's where you have to live. And you go, no, I don't think so. I think we'll move into our own place. Oh, grandma. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. I reckon she was probably furious, but, you know, what's she going to do about it at this point?
What was all the thing that was going on, like, over Christmas and stuff? Like, she had left them out of the family portrait or their Christmas photo wasn't on her desk when she did the Queen's Christmas. She was like, there was all this shady shit going on.
That's what the royals do better than anyone.
Yeah.
It's just subtle shade.
Yeah, she's rescued him from a really weird cult. Good for
what her. A pointless institution.
Yeah.
People are really mad about it, though, aren't they? Kay Hawkesby's up in arms.
Oh, that's just because she was right.
She never tried. I still don't get what she thinks she was right about. She's like, she had an agenda. She's only doing it to get famous.
She was already
But
famous.
What has happened is, she got more famous as a princess and decided she didn't want it anymore.
Yeah, she didn't want
that level of celebrity. So I don't get what the I was right agenda bit is, because she's rejecting the fame.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of the fame, because it's too late now. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's such a weirdly smug piece that we're really, you're sort of like, I still don't get what you think you're right about, because she that's escaped. Not what just happened. She left. Mm.
She escaped with the husband and the baby. Yeah.
For a life of less fame.
Yeah.
So, in lovely Canada.
I never trusted her. You know what? She doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, the idea of Meghan Markle opening her laptop and Googling Kate Hawksby.
Me? Thoughts?
Speaking of thoughts, Gwyneth's vagina candle.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
Okay.
I love it. I've just started watching the Goop show last night, and I am very easily sucked into mumbo jumbo.
Yeah.
You know, wellness stuff and anything that will make my life better by doing something extremely stupid. Well, I'll tell you what, I've already tried. I had a cold shower this morning because I'd watched the episode with that Wim Hof, the Iceman.
Okay, yeah.
It wasn't pleasant, and I feel like shit still. So.
Really?
It's just a cold shower.
Yeah.
Did you start with a warm shower and then
I did,
and then drop it down?
Yeah, I did a like dramatic last 30 seconds.
Okay.
Kind of.
Good for your hair doing that.
Yeah,
by the way.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
Closes off the something.
Sort of shiny the follicles. Don't want to say follicles. Down.
Yeah. It's supposed to do that after you've coloured your hair. You're supposed to rinse it in cold water, so you don't stain your pillowcase. I haven't achieved that.
But if you wanted to get our hands on one of Gwyneth Paltrow's candles that allegedly smells like her vagina, they're all sold out. They're gone.
I'm slightly confused because when this candle smells like my vagina, that's what it says.
Yes, geranium, citrusy bergamot, and cedar.
Does she specifically mean it smells like her vagina?
I think so.
Or does she want women to own a candle that? And that they think smells like their own vagina. You know, like it's an affirmation.
That's a good question.
It's not, this candle smells like Gwyneth's vagina, my vagina, meaning the owner of the candle.
Yeah.
So it's affirming that your vagina is fabulous.
I suppose once it's on the mantle and you have a guest round, that is how they would read it. They would see the candle and be like, well, this is your home, that's your candle.
Right.
I assume this is what your vagina smells like.
Well,
actually, when you think about all the negative connotations around how vaginas smell, actually putting that sort of quite subtle message into someone's brain that they actually smell quite nice.
Yeah, this
even if the candle is not literally vagina centered.
Yeah.
It's actually quite a nice subversive idea.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe the smell of a vagina. It just smells like
not
vagina.
Geraniums? You wouldn't use the word
bergamot.
Citrusy?
Definitely.
See, I would quite like the idea of a DIY kit.
Okay.
You know, if you got the, you could mix your own flavors.
Yeah.
Oils, scents.
Is this after you've made your thrush bread?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is a craft day, am
okay.
I?
Yeah.
Because I love a clean linen candle.
Yeah.
I love.
Because
I find it like magic that you can create the smell of clean linen. I know it's not that magical because it is actually chemical smells anyway, but for some reason it always felt like magic to me.
Aww. Bless you.
Vagina doesn't smell like clean linen. But they don't know that. I don't know who they are.
All I've got going
my
on
customers.
In my head right now is I said bergamot and it's bergamot. I want to apologise.
Bergamot.
Because I said bergamot and you said bergamot and I was like, I am shamed.
Oh, I'm wrong.
I had no idea.
No, I mean, that's one of the last things my mother said to me when I said something about, I've got this room spray, it's got bergamot. She said, it's bergamot, darling. So yeah, I just want to.
Great.
Been
told.
I'm going to stop. I get a lot of verbal spanking from older women. That is pretty much my job.
More on Goop. I just love it.
Okay, great.
I love it.
I'm going to start watching this weekend.
It's actually not even, I was watching with Joe, who made the really good point that it's kind of like post-Vice. You know how Vice did all that, like, we go and try these weird sort of things
Put
together kind of an edgy, the first episode's about psychedelics, experimenting with magic mushrooms and stuff. And it's like Vice, but pastel. Mm-hmm, you know, like it's literally basically the same and with a lot less edge and a lot more like talking about your feelings. And a lot of crying.
I love it.
Lovely.
I love it. I'm just fascinated.
Does Gwyneth, from the trailers and things that I've seen, it looks like a lot of people who aren't Gwyneth Paltrow
it's a lot of people
going
who aren't
off to
Gwyneth
do things.
Paltrow.
Yeah, okay.
But it's quite interesting, especially kind of working in like, I don't want to say that the spinoff is like the Goop Lab, but they do have like a content, they have an office of content creators.
Yeah.
So they're the people that go out, like her minions, do these experiments and then kind of report back to Gwyneth, who talks to an expert about it. And they recommend doing a psychedelic mushroom trip as like an office.
This is a great idea. I'm up for it.
Work yeah. trip.
Yeah. They're like, you know, there's a lot of, you just kind of shed yourself and yeah. it actually makes sense with all these people you spend so much time with that you have that kind of intimate experience. I was like,
I'm into it.
I don't know.
I just want to say that Gwyneth Paltrow, who has been an object of derision for good reason, shady eggs, plays a really instrumental role in bringing down Harvey Weinstein. Mm. And that's explained very clearly in She Said. Cool. And I will love her forever for that. Yeah. She did some very pivotal things that started to unravel the story. And when when they get all the women who have accused Weinstein together in a room, the room is at Gwyneth's house.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I have a lot of respect for her that I possibly did not have once I'd read about vagina dust.
Yeah.
What about, does this shake your respect for Gwyneth in any way? On the Goop website, you can buy a product called Psychic Vampire Repellent.
Okay, yeah, no, it does. Yeah, okay.
Still she's on just, board?
She's lost some points. Yeah.
Now.
You can banish psychic vampires with this essential oil blend of lavender, okay. rosemary, and
jerome. All right, no, all right.
What's the price point on that?
Just a cool US $27. Oh, wow.
All right,
40 odd.
Well,
over here.
Well, were there any? Did you see vampires in the Goop series?
Well, true.
So they're not there.
Psychic vampires,
even. Been repelled.
That's true. Mm. What else have you been watching and enjoying?
What am I doing with my life? I've been watching The Morning Show, which is a sort of story about a TV morning television show. Post Weinstein, where Steve Carell has been accused of being a sexual predator, and it's produced by Reese Witherspoon, and it stars Reese and Jennifer Aniston, and it is fucking superb, and it has great discussions about what the men are feeling and what women are doing for each other, and it's and what television's like. It's yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. I chewed through that in a couple of days, binged on that. It's on Apple Plus, so you sign up to Apple Plus and you watch The Morning Show and then you cancel that subscription because it's ridiculous to have too many platforms.
Exactly. What about you, Leonie?
So I binge-watched like a maniac the second season of Sex Education. I know I talked about it on Watch Club after they watched the first season. Second season maintains. Sex Education is like a teen dramedy on Netflix about a boy whose mother is a sex therapist, who is the incredible Gillian Anderson, and she's so great. And he starts giving out amateur sex advice at his high school, and all the issues that the kids come to him about are both incredibly relevant and ridiculously funny and filthy. And the whole show's universe is just like incredibly like gender and sexual diverse and very like open. And, like, you just find yourself learning stuff and laughing. Like, I learned about anal douching. And it's, like, this lecture delivered just by, like, this young French exchange student who's, like, teaching the boys about anal douching. And it's, like, it's just like, it opens up this entire world of stuff that teenagers aren't meant to talk about or know about even. And the parents in the show are also, like, our teenagers into what the fuck? Are you serious? And it's, like, that's just the reality. And it just sort of lays it out there in a way that's, like, super fun to watch. And some of the characters, I just think the writing is really good. Like, a lot of the characters are complete subversions of those teen tropes. The bully, his name is Adam. He's not really a bully, but I just think he's probably one of the best written characters in any teenage comedy ever.
Wow.
Just so complicated, physically imposing, but always on the edge of either, like, self-destruction or doing something amazing. And it's... Anyway, I love it. Gillian Anderson is incredible. She turns in this very like restrained performance, except for there's a moment where she cracks and you're like, holy shit, you're the greatest actress of our generation.
Whoa.
Yeah, so can't recommend that highly enough. And it's written by women. Half the episodes are directed by women. The other half by the guy who, I think, wrote, no, maybe just directed Catastrophe, that really great Sharon Horgan comedy.
Love
that. So yeah, I'm so, so, so into that show. Great. And everyone around it.
And it's on Netflix, eh? Mm. Incredible. I just like to give a shout out to The Bachelorette. Any Real Pod fans listening? Any reality TV fans in the house? Because it has been a long time coming that we have got a woman getting to choose from 20, however many men. And I've already been quite surprised by some of the conversations. I think they've done a really good trick giving all the men like little GoPros. Because I thought it might have been a budget thing. The more I think about it, I'm like, it's because men have trouble talking to each other about their feelings. So instead they have these little, their own little confessionals where they're like, oh yeah, I think I really like it, man.
So they can talk to a camera instead of each other.
They do, you know, I have actually been surprised the ease at which they're talking about feelings and stuff. But I do think that is another little extra level and I love it. And Dr. Lucina, The Bachelorette, is just an absolute vision. She is perfect in every single way, and she's a dream bachelorette, and I'm just really happy. I'm just really happy at the moment. It's a big moment for me.
Yeah, this is great.
The whole show.
We're really happy for you.
Thank you. It does feel, it's not, you know, I know there are bigger battles than gender equality in the Bachelor franchises, but.
No, it's the heart of the zeitgeist. If we can win it there, we can win the fringes.
I'm just waiting with bated breath to see. So there's a new Bachelorette arriving next week. There's going to be two. And I just am hoping and praying that they both get to stay and have equal amounts of agency, because the only other time this has happened was in the US one. And they started with two Bachelorettes and the men got to choose which one they liked more to stay. And it was like some of the most excruciating, disgusting television.
Horrible.
Completely undermined, like the whole thing. But I trust in New Zealand that we're not going to do that, because then I have to eat my words and delete my entire back catalogue. So yeah. We will see. What about reading?
I've already talked about She Said, so you, yes. Lovelies.
I would like to just give a shout out to two books that have been snubbed, The Occams. Linda Burgess's Someone's Wife.
Yeah.
Fantastic book of essays, kind of reflective, memoir-esque. She's just had an incredible life. She's so funny and it's so moving and it's so like gentle. It reminds me a little bit of like that Leah McFall collection of essays. Just like a really nice summer read, but also there's a lot of, you know, there are some like extremely sad essays and just wonderful. And Rose Liu's book, All Who Live on Islands, which is another sort of reflective memoir about her own experience growing up in Wellington as a Chinese New Zealander. And it's like nothing I've ever read before. And I just like to give a shout out to those two books. If you haven't read them, go buy them.
Cool.
That's great.
Good recs. I read a book on my break that really changed my brain a little. It's called How to Do Nothing, Resisting the Attention Economy by Jenny O'Dell. She's an artist that works in sort of like these digital media. She's done like residencies at like Facebook and the Internet Archive and whatnot. But the book is basically like resisting the attention economy kind of sounds like it's going to be like advice on how to like turn off the internet or whatever.
Log out. Yeah.
But it's not.
Okay.
She acknowledges that that's just part of life now. And it is sort of ways to use it more intentionally and like to facilitate real life interactions, face-to-face interactions. And that's sort of like the broader idea of the book, but how she actually explores it is like no other nonfiction book I've ever read. She's from the Bay Area in the US. Grew up basically in Silicon Valley and now lives in Oakland. And she goes off on this amazing historical tangent about basically the history of refusal, of people refusing to participate in what is seen as like the social norm of the day, but is actually potentially harmful to the people in it. So right back to like the Greek philosopher who was sort of like who started like the cynicism movement, basically. Mm. He would enter theatres after everyone left and just basically lived his life refusing, like doing the opposite of what everyone else was doing, kind of as art, kind of as philosophy. And then it also looked at the history of like trade unions, like indigenous histories. She spends a lot of time in nature, so it's like just talking about the permanence of like native birds and trees and like, I don't know, it just, she goes off on all of these amazing historical tangents and then always brings it back to an anecdote about her life and her career. So you kind of just still all the way through feel like you're having a conversation with someone. Mm-hmm. And she is quite a celebrated academic, but it does not feel like it's a book written by someone like that. Mm-hmm. It's just the clearest argument for being in nature and talking to people face to face, as if one were needed. But by the time you get to the end of the book, you're like, okay, this is how I need to live my life better in the digital world because it's kind of killing us.
Yeah. This is great.
Yeah, it's really great. It's probably the best nonfiction book I've read for me, anyway. Mm.
I feel like I know her name. Jenny O'Dell.
Huh?
I'll Google.
She teaches at Stanford, or at least she has.
Might have been when I was studying there.
Yeah, it might have been from your Stanford days. She talks about this thing called deep listening, which is taught or pioneered, I think, in the 70s by a music teacher at Stanford, which is kind of a form of meditation, but it's just listening to everything around you, from the things at the farthest edges of your listening to the nearest. And I was on Great Barrier, so I did deep listening every day while I was on Barrier. It's like, that's my way, that's my form of meditation. I can't actually meditate because I'm too distracted, but listening is something I can do well.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that as well.
That's great.
Yeah, so that was a good recommendation too.
Yeah. I really like books like that now that are like, acknowledge that it's not about just deleting your account.
No.
And turning off your phone. Like, we have to survive and live in this world.
Yeah.
But we can...
But you're allowed to say no.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the main points as well, I won't go on too much longer, but it's like you need to spend time in your life doing something that no one profits from.
Yeah.
You or a social media company or a retailer or whoever. But it's like you actually need to consciously spend hours doing stuff that no one is profiting from in order to have a happy life.
It's a really lovely point.
Yeah, and I was like, holy shit, like, even just looking at a website, someone else is making money off that.
Yeah,
yeah.
So just intentionally try to spend hours when no one's making money at all.
What if you open YouTube but you shut your eyes? What about then, Leonie?
You got me. You got us all.
Kia ora, Queenie, of the month. I would like to give a special shout out to Vanessa Nakate, I hope I said her name right, who is the 23-year-old Ugandan climate activist who was completely erased from that photograph that the Associated Press published and then sort of has now come into public view. Associated Press apologised for cropping her out, but still just called her African activist in a tweet, which she then retweeted and said, my name is Vanessa. Like, it was also quite a good instructive, like, how not to go about that, you
That's
know? How
terrible.
Not to go about apologising there. But yes, know her name, follow her work. She's got hell of a Twitter and she's fucking feisty.
That's
23-year-old.
How outrageous.
I know.
I looked at that and, oh, God. Who makes those? You've got to, I can't understand the thinking that went, oh, we'll just chop her off. She doesn't, one of these things doesn't look like the other.
It's ruining the symmetry of my photo.
Absolutely bullshit.
Shout out is to Renee Liang, who is a fantastic writer and also a pediatrician and also a fine parent and all the good things. And she wrote a great piece. She was clearly furious, but she can put words together when she's furious about there was a parenting expert, I'm making bunny ears, parenting expert in the Herald, who said that mothers texting while breastfeeding, this is dangerous and bad and evil and wrong and it'll kill everybody. And Renee wrote a fantastic response to that about all the amazing things that she's managed to do while breastfeeding her child on her phone. Like, she wrote a book with Michelle Powles, which was partly written with, you know, one finger on a, I don't know, maybe she uses two fingers when she's typing on a phone. And, you know, pointing out the obvious thing that any breastfeeding parent knows, that the baby's eyes are shut. They don't look at you. They don't know right. what you're doing. You could be painting the ceiling. They smell that. But you could be pulling terrible faces at them or wearing a mask. They wouldn't know. They've got their eyes shut. They're having a lovely time with the breast milk. So, yeah. So, fantastic clap back to that ridiculous piece of mother shaming in the Herald.
Good. Cool. We love that. We'd love to see it. My Kia Ora Queenie, a collective of people... If you didn't know, February is hashtag Fat Feb, and it's all about celebrating your fat body. And a lot of activity. I mean, this has been spearheaded by Emma Tavola, who runs a gallery in Otahuhu called Vunilangi Vu. And so they've got a whole program of stuff happening around the fat body, which is really cool. But also, halfway through the month, they're having a Fat Babe pool party, which is happening on the 15th of February at this hotel in Otahuhu, the Mount Richmond Hotel in Otahuhu. They've got this like really great courtyard and this massive pool. You can buy tickets, and there's also workshops and artistic events with people like Megan Kerr and Lissy Cole and Coco Solid. And it's all about celebrating, drawing, writing about the fat body, having a party in your togs with other people that want to celebrate their fat bodies, and I'm so into it, and I'm going to the pool party because it sounds like such a good time. And if that sounds like your cup of tea, I reckon you should go too.
Yeah, we'll post it up on our Facebook page as well.
That's so great. That's a whole lot of Kia Ora Queenie right there.
Yeah. Well, I'm feeling a bit better now.
I do too.
I gotta say, after this pod.
I looked at the list and thought, oh, this might be quite dark. The fires, wine scene. But I feel great.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sticking with us. No, this has been slightly longer than usual, but it's been a hell of a month. So
a couple of months. We missed you guys.
We did miss you guys. And we'll be back as normal end of February. And yeah, if you haven't watched our web series yet, do check it out on YouTube. We've got eight episodes of lots of different things. Lots and lots of
sex positivity, climate changing, I don't know.
Online abuse.
What did we do?
Yeah. For a laugh. That.
And getting older and there's so much. It's surprising we've still got subjects for this year, but by crikey we have.
We should do.
And you should see the long list. Season 3, hello. But anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So bye.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spin-Off. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spin-Off member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-Off Podcast Network.